Sam Plante on the line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Monica Homburg has been on before, and she joins me in person this morning. She's brought along Bill Allman, her co-host of the Dazed and Convicted podcast. It's described on its website as a dark humor podcast about complete fucktards in the news. It's a successor to the S&M Rants, which Monica hosted with Shane Burley, which we talked about back in June. The premise of the show is that they discuss two stories in the news wherein the criminal involved, the fucktard, does something completely ridiculous, stupid, disgusting, or all three and more. It's a funny show, they're hilarious, and it's got some good production value, songs, skits, and the sword voice imaging, and more. And each week they've got a guest, usually a comic, who comes on to weigh in on which of the two fucktards gets to be the fucktard of the week. It's an entertaining illustration of the absurdity of human behavior. Mr. Allman and Ms. Homburg join me in person, in studio as it were, to discuss their show, why they do it, and the response they've been getting, which is tremendous. Monica Homburg is a social media evangelist, and according to BC Business Magazine, one of Vancouver's social media innovators. Bill Allman is, if I found the right one on LinkedIn, an independent entertainment professional here in Vancouver. He's also a lawyer. The website is at dazedandconvicted.com. Monica has one at yourdoseoflunacy.com. Please welcome to the Plante on the Line program in the studio today, Bill Allman and Monica Homburg. Good morning, Ms. Homburg.
Good morning.
And good morning, Mr. Allman.
Good morning to you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So, when you were last on the show, Monica, you were on with Shane on Skype. And so one of the reasons why I'm having you on again is because that day, the Skype connection, I guess, wasn't that good. So, every third word was lost.
But I hope the one in three or the two in three that you got were hilarious.
They were hilarious, yeah.
Word was probably dirty.
It probably was, just a series of fuck. Screw, like a big Tourette's symphony.
But it was fun, though, and so I'm glad to have you both here today and in person today. So what happened to Shane?
It was just a time conflict.
Penis size.
Yeah. I don't like to say that, you know, because I just don't want it to be evaluated.
Is that a criteria or a criterion for being a co-host, penis size?
Yeah, penis size is pretty critical, yes. I mean, I'm not going to say which direction it needs to go in, but, yeah.
I win.
So you've been, Bill, on the program as a guest in the past.
Correct.
So what was, what drew you to become the co-host? I mean, she asked you, or how did that work out?
Well, she asked me, but boy, any opportunity to talk about retarded criminals, and really, is there another kind? You got to dive at it. I lobbied her for months, honestly.
Yeah.
The truth is, campaigns. What happened to Shane? Grease on the stairs, push. It's an old backstage trick.
Yeah, you know, the locking in the closet just seems like so old school.
Yeah, really, you know? It's amateur hour.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, weren't you the manager of the Vogue at one point?
Very good research. Yes, yeah. I was the house manager for, about 3 years at the Vogue Theatre.
Yeah, so that's what you would do backstage, is grease the stairs?
That's right. I'd get the young ingenues to go, could you take out the leading lady? Yeah, no problem.
There you go, yeah. So has the show always had the sort of skits and songs? I mean...
Yeah, Shane and I used to improv some things,
yeah.
but when Bill came on, it was great to actually, I like scripting things, and so does Bill, and so that was a great opportunity to do that, so we could kind of, yeah.
Part of independent entertainment professionals, I'm also a screenwriter,
yeah.
And I've written for television, so yeah, scripting was sort of second nature.
And but we worked on a screenplay we never got out yet, so we kind of knew we could work together.
But when I listen to the show, there are moments of spontaneity, right?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Invariably that happens when you have funny people on together and you're reading funny stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's not scripted. The actual reading the stories, we might have some lines we want to throw in. A lot of it is conversation.
Yeah.
The sketches are scripted, and some things will move along, but those are pretty solid.
But for the most part, you're absolutely right. Any of the bits we're reading as news stories, the commentary is done on the fly. And we've read them. We've done some prep. But for the most part, we rely on our improv skills.
And so how do you find the stories? I mean, it's not difficult, I'm sure, to find idiots in the news, right?
They're all people I know. Yeah, exactly. People I'm friends with. I specifically become friends with people so I could make fun of them on the show. It's really... And I don't have friendships for long, surprisingly. It's not difficult in the sense that basically I look at FARC. Yeah. And they have a whole series. But it's not always easy because of the pairing up, right? Yeah. I try to find stories that have some sort of similarity. That's where the time suck comes in, because just to find things that match up in some way is a bit challenging for the week.
Do you think that people are... because the people on the show, they do stupid things. I mean, the people you talk about, I should say.
Absolutely, yeah. No, the
you guys have
what he said.
Yeah. The people that are actually hosting the show.
No, the people that you talk about, I mean, they're really effed up. They're really weird. They're crazy. They do stupid things. And do you think that the internet or social media has made us weird, or are we just hearing about it more?
Okay, what's your call?
I have an uncle who was a BC cop in the 1930s.
Yeah.
Believe me, the stories are not that different.
Right? Yeah.
You just got to beat the perpetrators a lot harder in those days.
I think the fact that you have social media allows the news stories to kind of perpetuate. Like, we might not know that there is a loser in North Carolina who did X if it wasn't for the internet. So I think that that's just the fact that it doesn't have to be local. We can find stories from all over that are ridiculous.
Do local stories, like, are there fucktards in this part of the world, Vancouver?
Yeah,
well, we did the Abbotsford thing, because they have that was episode 84, I think, where the Abbotsford Police Department decided that they wanted to send cards to criminals, and cards would be, you know, life-changing, because it would have, you know, think about your choices this Christmas.
Well, the card had an image of Santa Claus carrying assault rifles and in Kevlar body armor and with tactical gear on. And it was, you know, which list are you going to end up on this year?
Right.
Naughty, nice, or fucking shot through the head.
Yeah. I mean, that was the most absurd thing, because I don't think that anyone bases their criminal activities on whether they're going to have Santa visit over the holidays.
I do.
Okay. Fair enough.
You want to end up on the nice list, right?
Yeah. Anyone who's part of his tagline is, he sees you when you're sleeping, I'm pretty wary of that individual.
Yeah, I would be pretty scared of that, too. I mean, if any other context, he sees you when you're sleeping, sounds like he's then unzipping his pants.
Oh, yeah. No, it's grounds for a restraining order, no question.
Pretty concerning. So, yeah, whatever you were talking about.
Do you find after doing the show that you understand human behavior a bit better?
How cute.
You'd think so, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But no.
No?
No. We're just more bemused by it than ever.
But you do get a sense of what people would do for sex, right?
I go out a lot less.
I'm a girl, so I know exactly the lengths people would go to for sex. And I'm an actor, and I trained in the Meisner Technique, which is all about reading behavior, so I have a weird sense of what people do and how people react. But I'm always amazed, so that's good.
And nothing shocks you anymore?
I wouldn't say that. No, I have to particularly pick the articles that make me roll my eyes in some way. So no, I'm always shocked, but I think I'm less aggravated because I can make fun of the stories. So instead of getting infuriated, I'm like, this is funny.
Yeah.
See, that's funny because I'm not shocked.
You're not shocked.
I can't remember a story that you've brought out that has made me go, wow, I would have never thought that. And again, I think it comes from, frankly, having heard a lot of these types of tales as I was growing up.
Okay.
I just assume that the average criminal, and I apologize to, I'm sure many of your listeners are criminals, I assume the average criminal has the brains of a gnat and the rationality of, well, you on a good day.
On a good day, huh? Wow. This is kind of impressive. I think because my life has been so focused on film, I always got this image of that's because what they put out there is these brilliant criminals, right? These killers, and they have these big plans and the calendars, and everything's super organized, and they're going to trick the police forever. And most criminals are totally stupid, and their decisions are just based on desperation and stupidity.
The keyboard player in my band is a former cop from the Lower Mainland. And I sat down with him one night after enjoying some of the BBC's Sherlock series, and I said, tell me, have you, in 30 years of being a cop, ever run into a criminal with, like, the Moriarty type of mind, the genius? He said, yeah, one. One in 30 years, and the guy was, in the end, tripped himself up by making a deal with the police for a van load of stolen goods.
Huh.
So,
wow.
A little shy of Moriarty. Yeah.
30 years and only one. You can imagine how many they deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah, no, he said, don't make any mistakes. You guys are... You guys are just hitting the average.
Yeah. So do people around you, friends, family, and the sort, do they think that you're just a couple of deviants? That you're...
They already knew that before the show started.
No more than usual.
No?
No.
Yeah, no more than usual.
How many friends do you have?
Not many. Less and less every day.
Yeah. We've covered several of them in the podcast for both of us. So
I think as the Facebook fans go up, the amount of my friends get lower and it's inversely proportional.
Yeah, and if that doesn't bother you.
No. Oh, God, no. No, I was always a freak, so I have no issues with that.
Yeah, I never exactly, I was never really marching down Main Street. We've both got partners, and both of them have certainly, we were just talking about this, we've gotten cringe moments as they listen to the podcast.
Especially the sketches.
Yeah, some of the sketches where they go, you came up with that?
You're both gross.
And so do you have to make a deal with them that you're not going to talk about certain things that happen in your own lives?
No.
That's what separations are for.
I do very rarely ask Chris, is it okay if it's something I'm talking about, if it's a relative or something where it could be uncomfortable for us. I have sometimes checked. I have luckily never gotten a no, he just doesn't care, which is fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you ever hear, though, from people that you talk about? I mean, the criminals, I mean, they probably don't listen to the show, probably, right?
They're not smart enough, right? But, you know, pretty much everyone that listens isn't in some way a deviant, so that works.
Oh, yeah, deviant, but so far I think they're deviants who are sitting there going, well, at least they're not talking about me this week, so... Whew.
Yes.
They're probably living with an impending sense of doom that next week they may be on.
But no.
It keeps a certain level of loyalty going.
They come back next week, right?
Maybe this time. Yeah. Fuck, somebody else did something more stupid. Yeah. No, nobody writes us that's actually committed the crimes. I don't know how I'd feel about that. I mean, it's might be bound to happen. Would it? Would it?
That'd be so awesome. Oh, yeah. Get a letter with a little picture of a guy in an orange jumpsuit. I'm all over that.
Oh, that would be interesting. Okay, maybe someday.
Love you to bits. From Chainsaw Chucky in Chattanooga.
Ah, that would make me feel so safe.
Is there anything that you won't talk about on the show or you won't do?
I don't think so.
I have to say sometimes articles will disturb me and I cannot find anything redeeming or funny about them and then we won't put it on.
Well, yeah, I'd agree there. I can remember one or two where the crime was so heinous and so revolting and there was, yeah, you're right, there was just no funny, redeeming value to it.
Yeah.
And you certainly don't want to give those people any attention.
Exactly, yeah.
If somebody does something stupid, that's one thing. If somebody does something that's truly evil...
Well, no, that's not... We certainly have had that, too.
We've had truly evil mixed with stupid.
Yes, I think it has to be mixed with stupid. And again, like, I just... Some people are great at that. Like, I listen to podcasts where they take the most horrible things and can put a spin on it. They're better than I am. I think that there's certain things I just don't... I read the whole article and I'm like, I'm just depressed now, and I can't make anything funny out of it.
I mean, there was a program that I listened to this weekend from a few weeks ago. Where the guy molested a bunch of kids, and I mean, you made that funny.
Thank you.
You know, I mean, it's not usually a funny thing.
No, it isn't.
No, not usually. Yeah,
we feel we earn our money when we do that.
Yeah, really, that amazing paycheck we both get. Thank you. Yeah, there's some where again, there's sometimes where it involves rape or something like that, which obviously is in no way funny, but something the criminal did is just like, are you kidding me? It's amazing, and there's some things, you can just find that one funny thing. If you can, that works. Again, I don't think I'm a master at it yet, but I'm glad that there are times, you know.
The most recent show that you did, though, on the 18th, I guess it came out January 18th, so which would have been Friday.
Yes.
There was a story about an Indian man who went up a tree.
Yes.
Now, it seemed to me, and I don't know if this is it's true or not, but it seemed to me that one of you wanted to do the accent. The stereotypical Indian accent that you hear
on
television.
I mean, I have no...
You were singing, I was banging finger cymbals, the accent just came out.
You made me do that. Yeah. Okay, no, I take full responsibility. No, I egged her on.
Yeah, okay. No, but I egged you on.
But there was a hesitancy in doing that.
Yeah, only because it didn't work comedically.
Ah.
Not because... Were you worried about offending anybody?
Oh, God, no, because by then I... Oh, wait, no, that's how we started it, and then we recorded the other stuff. So I got more offensive as we went along, but the order seems like it's, you know, I'm... differently, because we've reversed it. I reversed it when I edited it. I don't know. There's times where I do feel like... I hope people understand that I'm kidding, but I have to trust that they will, because there's nothing I can do about it otherwise. Otherwise, I'm just being PC, and I hate PC.
You'd start self-censoring very quickly if you did.
I would be constantly.
If you let the brain go that way. You start to edit as you're writing, even as you're recording, if you've got that little editor on, you're going to kill the comedy.
I agree. Yeah.
So far better to just let it flow. And you know what? If you do an accent that Sanjay up the tree happens to hear someday and gets pissed about, well, Mick Jagger did say it.
Yeah.
Fuck him if he can't take a joke.
So how do you put the show together? I'm always interested in the technical aspects of it. Do you do it live to tape as we're doing now, or how does that work?
We do the articles live to tape, and
We do a lot of we do a fair amount of prep.
Do a lot of prep.
Write the script in advance, obviously. Yeah,
the full pages are there, and then for the sketches, we generally record them live straight out, and then the sound effects get either created in studio and added, or taken off the internet, or
at Free Sound.
Yeah,
Free Sound is an excellent source for free sound.
And now they owe us money. Yeah,
yeah, So we record it live. We take about 2.5 hours
generally
depending.
To do a show,
and then I record separately with the guest.
Yeah,
and then we put it. I go home and I edit and
edits like a maniac and gives us the fine professional pacing that you hear every week.
Yeah, I mean it's so well cut. You know, I mean they're different segments and the sort, but it just seems like it's one seamless.
That's all.
Go.
Thank you. Yeah. That's wonderful to hear because editing has always been a great bane of my existence. I don't love it. I have come to enjoy the end result enough where I feel invested in it.
Yeah, that's why I don't edit the interviews. I mean, I would think that it'd be a pain in the ass to have to sit there and cut and do all that. So.
And that's something that, as we started, we had to learn to not interrupt each other.
Yeah.
You know, leave spaces where we felt the other person was going to say something. Read body language, and I can see the looks of pain. Exactly. I can see the looks of pain on Monica's face when I'm saying something I should just shut up for. So.
Yeah.
Do you really?
Oh, sure.
Well, you'd be seeing my grimace all the time.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Wow, that must be uncomfortable for you.
That's why I close my eyes a lot.
The comics that you have on the program, you mentioned already that you have guests that come on. These are fairly famous comedians, are they? Or?
They're pretty well known. I mean, it depends on the person, but they're all solid comics. I mean, you can tell by how they sound.
Yeah.
It's just a pleasure and honor to be able to talk to them. Yeah.
Yeah, and so do you know them all, or how do they...
I know no one. I'm blissful.
Nobody likes you.
Yes. They do for that whole hour we talk, okay? They pretend. And I feel good about
myself.
To
quote many of my intimate relations, they're faking it.
Oh, fuck. Oh, you love me, don't you, Nick? Don't you? No, I know no one, and I'm blissfully ignorant, and that helps the whole show. I'm fortunate because, because people volunteered to be, like, when I asked people to be on the show, they actually said yes, even when, before it was appropriate, before it was like, okay, this sounds good, right? Like, because, you know, there's a process with the whole podcast, and sometimes it was early enough where I didn't have that much to show, and people were like, yeah, sure, why not?
I've seen her approach, actually. Usually it's yes. Now finish cleaning my windshield and walk away from my car. That was good.
Excuse me, you've seen the Rona approaches. Usually it's yes, but please zip your shirt up. But what's happened now, which I'm very like, I used to basically scour the internet and look for clips. And it's a long process because it's got to be somebody that I think there's something about their approach that I think will be really great on the show. And then it's pitching them and, you know, the odds of getting them are always, you know, it wasn't too bad from the beginning, but it wasn't everybody I pitched. But what I'm fortunate with now, especially, is that people are great that I've had on the show, and I'll ask them, do you know anybody else you think would be great on the show? And they'll recommend someone, and obviously the social proof of them having been on the show helps the other person go, okay, they probably don't suck because Bill was on the show or whatever. Not you, Bill, but someone that they care about.
They don't care about this Bill, do they?
Hey.
Why would you? Except for cock size.
And we're back to penis size. The places that the stories come from, it seems to me that that you can tell where they come. They come from a certain part of the United States, don't they?
Florida?
I think he's saying there's a lot of southern accents.
I wonder if there really is a disproportionate amount of southerners.
Yeah, there is.
There is, really? Yeah, there is. Okay. Yeah, that's heartbreaking.
I'm sorry, we just don't see a whole lot of bylines that read Boston near Harvard.
Yeah.
They must do more interesting crimes there, is what it is. I mean, they don't do a lot of fraud or things like that, and that's obviously probably...
They're not doing higher functioning crimes, I think is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, white collar crime is not funny.
No, it's not funny, right? So I would imagine that stuff is happening, but you're right, you know,
Yeah, well, it's the old, it's the old redneck joke, redneck's last words. Hey, everyone, watch this. That factors into a lot of the crime reporting, too.
Oh, it does.
Were there people that you listened to before that inspired this podcast for you, Monica?
For me, yeah, as I went along. I listened to podcasts once we had begun, and then I thought about all the... And there were things that I already listened to, so I've been a big fan of the show Distorted View with Tim Henson. I think he's phenomenal, and he definitely does do a lot of new stuff, and his approach is fantastic. And that was one of the influences in terms of he's very structured in terms of what happens in the show. He's got this whole, you know, bunch of stuff where he, in the beginning of the show, where he puts a lot of audio in and things, samples, like a lot of videos and weird things. And then he's got the specific news section. And when I was producer, when I started producing it, I thought, what I want is a real structure, because that's the stuff that I love, is the stuff that's like, I know what I'm expecting, I know what's going to come up, and it's fast, and it moves along. And I have no attention span, so I made a podcast for myself and people like me.
And so you say that it takes, what, 2.5 hours for you to sit down and actually do this every week?
The actual recording. Oh, well, just the two of us.
Yeah, just the two of us. An occasional guest voice from Malox, the mighty Explosator.
That's right, or our guest collaborator. But the writing is a lot more.
Yeah, how many hours do you figure you spend on editing?
Editing is brutal. Editing is 12 to 14 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. Production, to the total amount of time spent on each episode is, and I hate to admit this because then you're like, oh, okay, you're insane, is anywhere from 20 to 25 hours total a week. It's a part-time job.
Wow.
We spend time collaborating on the sketches.
On the sketches and the writing. And, yeah, just organizing the scripts is probably another 4 or 5 hours.
Right. Yeah, right.
By the time all's said and done, and we've done our research and reading. And
absolutely. And then, yeah, and then we get together, we record it.
Yeah.
And then, exactly.
It's,
and then
it's no small feat.
No, yeah. It isn't. It's a lot of production.
So then, did you ask yourself why you do it?
Oh, every minute of every day. Yeah. I don't wake up a day where I'm like, I found a new way to waste my life. So, yeah.
I mean, you don't think that, do you, really?
There are times where I check my life, right? I mean, yeah. I'm 38, uh-huh. And I've
gone... She does not look it.
No, not at all.
Thank
no.
you. And I've gone
45.
Through... 45. I would have picked you about 60, 62.
And rough living.
You know, by the way, I've had that conversation. There was sometimes where someone does that, and it's really brutal, because one guy did this to me at a party. How old do you think I look? I was like... And I was trying to go 10 years down, so yeah. I went, about 42, 31. I'm like, what the fuck did you ask me for? Are you insane?
The worst one for me was that I own a car that was built the same year I was born,
uh-huh.
1965. I had a woman ask me once, are you the original owner?
Listen, you can't tell that just by the way I thrust. Yeah, I wonder only because, you know, I know that people have put time into things that make them money, and I have tried that, and I have largely felt that it's been dissatisfying. I find the things that I like to do creatively are the ones that sometimes don't have enough monetary associations yet. So that there's definitely times where I'm like, what am I doing? But then I just have to go, it doesn't matter, because I really love doing this, and it's the thing that gives me the greatest sense of satisfaction.
And without, you know, sounding too much like we've been reading Eckhart Tolle or something, it is a case of keep doing it better and better, and you will eventually find a way to monetize it or take a sideways step into something that does pay, if you need that.
Yeah.
The satisfaction, am I speaking for both of us here, the satisfaction we both get out of doing it and doing it really well is immeasurable.
Yeah. It's kind of creepy. I have to say that, you know, at the end of when I put the episode out on a Friday, it's just like... this amazing sense of relief, you know, like joy and relief, and it's crazy, but it's like and I don't feel like that with almost anything else.
It's like a really good poop.
But the feeling lasts for at least a day, whereas the poop's only like an hour or 2 hours where you're like, I did well.
I've had tingling for 24 hours.
You eat very badly. It's just something I've noticed.
I'm for more fiber.
Do you find that that you want things to change, say, in terms of how people react to other people? Or I mean if that changed, I mean, you wouldn't have fodder for the show, right?
In terms of people being less PC or
not less PC, but you know, less fucktard behavior, I guess.
It's gonna happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you smoke before we got here?
I was reading Eckhart Tolle.
The Audacity of Hope by Barack Obama.
Exactly.
Yeah, hope for what? Hope that people will be less fucktarded? Good luck, guys.
I heard this terrible Nickelback song, which is redundant, I understand. But every time I hear a Nickelback song, I'm more and more stunned by how terrible it is. But there was something like, I wish there was a world where people wouldn't lie, where people wouldn't cry, where people wouldn't die. They really are these fucking lyrics. And I thought to myself, but that's not existence. You know?
You're in the music business, Chad.
Yeah, that's right. There's a lot. It's a smooth road. But I think that there's just no way to prevent that. I mean, there's human behavior. I think we're basically good, but there's always going to be a fucktard or two or 10,000 in the grand scheme of the population that exists. And what are you going to do about it except make fun of it or get depressed? And I choose the making fun of it.
Much more productive, quite honestly.
It feels a lot more enlightening, you know? Like, it's nice to read an article that's really horrible and be like, all right, let's do something with this, instead of, I think I'll blow my brains out tonight.
That's true enough. It does, there is, in all seriousness, there's probably a side of doing this that prevents us from becoming more cynical about the average person.
Yeah.
While at the same time understanding that the average person, you know, particularly criminal, isn't maybe all that smart.
Yeah, there's a joy in that.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's... There's no question. It's the function of dark humor is always to, you know, without the oxymoronic pun intended, it's to lighten the load.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, it's why people who work and, you know, I know some crown prosecutors, in particular district attorneys in the States, who have worked on some of the most horrific cases. They have the wickedest senses of humor. It's the only way they can cope, and frankly, the only way they can let the people around them start to cope too.
Yeah.
You know, I know some of the guys who worked on one of our worst serial killers here, and they are wickedly funny people.
Yeah.
As if they weren't, they'd probably be chewing on the end of a service revolver.
Who are the comics that you found funny growing up?
George Carlin is the first name that comes to mind. No big shock there. Growing up, yeah, it's funny. I loved Bob Newhart growing up.
Yeah.
Oh, I love him too.
Yeah, he's fantastic. But I'd have to say, in terms of who's a master, I just look at Carlin and I go, there's the guy.
Yeah.
There's the guy who, I watched him take down a heckler once by screaming, and I hope your child dies in a car fire. There was the master of the dark joke, the dark humor.
And who did you find particularly inspiring?
Yeah, I paid to be a copycat. Carlin was always a big influence. Yeah. I love Carlin. I mean, nobody can say they don't, I think, unless they... Man, just not that type of humor. I liked a lot of the comics that I would say now I wouldn't emulate. I did like Billy Crystal. I think that comedy's changed significantly.
Yeah, that was cultural.
And that's cultural, yes, of course it is. No, but I don't like Jackie Mason, who sucks ass. And so it isn't entirely. But
he was in Caddyshack too, which is all I needed to damn him forever.
Oh, his humor is so brutal. My parents love him, though. So it's how it works. Yeah. Old Jews love him. I don't think his audience is composed of anything but old Jews. But yeah, I think Carlin's great. There's podcasters, like I said, I listen to now that are tremendously influential. Yeah.
For newer ones, I mean, you and I are both, I think, in love with Lewis Black.
Yeah, Lewis Black is great, obviously. Yeah.
And again, it's that dark, that edgy delivery. Yeah. You know, that borderline anger.
Yeah.
You know, he always comes across as someone on the verge of a stroke.
Yeah. Yeah, I've always loved that. And yeah, I listened to the New York City Crime Report with Pat Dixon, who I just think is phenomenal. And he and everybody on his show is the master of the dark, because they talk about just the most horrific crimes in New York City. Mm-hmm. And I'm amazed at what they can do with that, because there's things where I just don't know what they're going to do with it. How could you possibly make that funny? And it's such a relief. It's so therapeutic to listen to that show. Sometimes I'll see something, I'm like, I don't know how to get over this. And then they'll make a joke, and I'm like, it's better now. Because there's nothing you can do anyway, right?
Do you find that there are great comics in the city?
I'm on and off. Sometimes, yes.
There are some absolute treasures. I'm a huge Simon King fan. Boy, I mean, there, I'm just going to give him his plug, because in terms of people who deliver with the anger and the energy that I love in a comic, and it's, you know, that's not to everyone's taste. There are people who need their comedians to tell knock-knock jokes and be very gentle, and believe me, none of them are listening by this point in the interview. we've definitely produced some treasures. Vancouver, frankly, any comic starting out in Vancouver needs to get out of Dodge.
Really?
Go hone your skills elsewhere. Come back here for visits, work a bit, get out of Dodge again.
Yeah.
Do you think that says something about us, though, as Vancouverites?
Mm.
You know, the market's not here.
Yeah, the market isn't.
The reality
is... It's a new city.
Yeah, it's a new city where I describe as facetiously as a logging camp with suburbs. and it's not that we don't... Yeah, you know, there are lots of people who like culture, there are lots of people who like sports, there are reasons why you just can't spend your money on everything. Yeah. I don't think Vancouver has any deficiencies as a city. I chose at an early age to live my life here, and I love it. But to build a career as an entertainer, if I was serious about being on stage, whether it was as a performer of any kind, actor, comic, I'd get out.
Yeah,
it's just, it's the city itself is a huge barrier to progress in terms of, just because of what's available and how slowly it's moving. People are trying their best to make this a city full of comedy, but it's a slow progress because it's just has never been a city full of comedy. I would have to give kudos to Sarah Bino, who runs The Amazing, who's funny,
yes,
absolutely hilarious,
yeah.
And also runs The Amazing Say What. And every time I go there every month, it is an amazing showcase of great comics who do fantastic stuff. They basically read horrible literature, whether it's celebrity books or something that was, you know, nominated for won the Governor General Award, that still is baffling as to how it mm-hmm. did. And the comics, you know, read it, interpret it, and make their own jokes. And it's amazing to see what they do with it. And it shows you what kind of great talent, like, you know, Eric Fell and Ivan Decker and a whole bunch of other phenomenal people, Lauren McGibbon. They're all amazing. So it's nice to see that consistently in the city. Yeah, very. Very impressed by that.
Did you perform regularly, Monica?
I am not a stand-up, so no, I was always
but
an
in
actor.
Terms of acting and things like that, do you do that regularly?
Not anymore. The podcast is where I put all my fury. I don't that much anymore. I don't find that there's a lot of place that I can do that. And, you know, that might be just a matter of the things that are there or the connections that I have or lack thereof. Or maybe, you know, maybe to some extent my ability isn't that strong. I mean, those are all possible factors. So I don't perform all that much anymore. But I do the podcast, which, you know, gives me a lot of outlet, obviously.
Yeah, and
just returning to what we were talking about, the city, it's become quite fashionable among some people that I think we both know to slag Vancouver for Vancouver, you know, Vancouverites or hockey people or whatever. It's a degree of arrogance on the part of often incompetent performers to not sit back and realize, you know, on a Friday night, somebody who's been punching the clock and earning whatever they're earning, you know, $20, $25 an hour, has a decision to make. How am I going to spend my time now that I'm tired, and how am I going to spend my money that I worked my ass off before? You're going to spend it on the thing that satisfies you the most, and there's no obligation on anyone's part to go see a comic, or to go to a hockey game, or to go to the theater.
Well, and people don't want to accept too much risk, which is understandable. You don't want to spend $20 or your hard-earned night, relaxing. You want to spend it relaxing. You don't want to take a chance that it's going to be terrible, and there's always that risk. And it's the reason Yelp reviews are so popular, because, you know, you see a restaurant, and you're like, I don't want to pay money and have a disappointing meal. And so you check your Yelp reviews. I think the same thing is relevant for arts. You want to be able to, okay, I know I'm going to enjoy this, so it's something you're familiar with, or it's something, yeah.
Vancouver is culturally is a very risk-averse city. We do like to have the hits come to town and not so big on experimentation. That will change as the city grows, as the urban core densifies.
Yeah,
we're not there yet. And that's just a reality of planning and evolution.
But the reviews for Dazed and Convicted are tremendous, aren't they?
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, yes.
I'm just gonna
Let's
say
go
yes.
with
yeah.
that. Sure.
Yeah. I mean, that must be gratifying. People email or tweet or whatever.
That's great. I have to say
send
the emails.
Pictures from prison. No, it's
ask me if they can live in my trash. I got that recently. But they were willing to actually travel from Scandinavia to live in my trash. And I got to say, that's a lot of effort.
Yeah, I remember the article from last week. Scandinavia is no longer somewhere I would want to stay. I would rather live in your trash.
My trash!
Than go to Stockholm and get a felt knife through the neck. Or
I am an absolute pig. You have no idea what my trash looks like.
They drive commuter trains into apartment buildings in Sweden.
They do!
Come on.
But their apartment buildings look fucking much more durable than ours. We would never make it through that.
They also look better after the trains hit them.
I have to say, the most satisfying things are when people write an email. Like, they just discovered us. They didn't. There was one guy who wrote a really sweet one recently, which was, you know, I was looking through things on iTunes, and I thought with a title, which Bill came up with, Dazed and Convicted, and with a title like Dazed Convicted, it's bound to be at least interesting. You know, and so I tried it out, and I really, really liked it, and now I've listened to, he said, I've now listened to 16 since I found it. Yeah, and so, to me, that's the greatest compliment, is someone willing to marathon a show, because when I love something, I want to hear, I'm obsessive, I want to see all the episodes of a show, or I want to hear, and that's a huge compliment, because it's not a favor they're doing, or at least that's, you know, that's what it makes me feel like, it's not a favor, it's like, wow, I really like it, and I just want to hear more, and that's great. Yeah.
I think the suicides we've prevented are big for me. I love getting those letters. Well, I love getting those letters where it's like, my suicide note was half written, I started listening to your podcast, I corrected a bunch of stuff, and I've decided to live.
Yeah, I think I've looked at my life and I've realized people are more stupid than me. And that's now right. I think I find that's what keeps me from killing myself every week.
It's just been so delightful having you, here, and I appreciate you both coming in, and I'm big fans of the podcast, and thanks for doing this.
Thank you. So
and email us and tell us that on a weekly basis.
I will do that.
Please.
It'll keep us alive.
Get pictures, please.
It'll prevent the suicide, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Dazedandconvicted.com is the website. It's host Monica Humberg and Bill Allman. Join me in studio here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plantin.